This is the Blood and Platelets podcast, tales of transplant survivors with Brandon, Alex, and Chrissy. We are genetically modified humans who have come together to tell real stories, real emotions, real experiences, to fill a void for patients, encourage, give hope, and inspire those going through treatment and beyond.
All right, Brandon, Chrissy,
Alex.
Okay, why don't you start with telling us who you are?
My name is Alex Tung, and I am a cancer survivor, acute myeloid leukemia cancer survivor, bone marrow transplant survivor, cord blood transplant survivor. I was a City of Hope survivor.
Alumni,
yes. My story begins back in 2014, in June 26th exactly, 2014 was the day I was diagnosed, or I was told by my family doctor that I had cancer and leukemia. Both of those terms were, you know, that day was the first time both of these terms came into my life.
How old were you?
I was 38 years old. So I was 38 years old. I was working full time at the time. I was actually in what I thought was the greatest shape and health of physically of my life. And then I was struck in with this devastating news. Leading up to it, you know, I've been a pretty active young man growing up here in Southern California all my life, surfing, skating, snowboarding, all basketball, all that good stuff. Lived a fairly normal, healthy life. I mean, I did go out and, you know, have a few drinks sometimes, and I did party a little bit back in my days, and, you know, drank some alcohol, smoked some cigarettes and some, you know, some weed, whatever, but nothing that would alarm me that, you know, I was on a path that was going to lead to cancer. Nothing I ate was out of the ordinary, or nothing I exposed myself to was, you know, nothing out of the ordinary, like toxic wise that I thought. But in January of 2014, which was the year I was diagnosed, I had an annual physical. I had my blood checked, I had my full body, you know, examined, and I came out clear of everything, like healthy build. And everything was good. And then, yeah, I don't know, for some reason, by like February or March of that year, like a month or two later, I started noticing some little red dots on my body. And what I know now is they're called petechiae, or there's another name for it. Just little tiny red dots, like pin size, you know, red dots all over my body, my arms, my legs, even like my neck, you know, some on my face. I don't know. And at that time, I was surfing a lot, like almost every day. And I thought that it was just some kind of, I don't know, skin rash from the water or the sun. And that's what all my family and friends thought. They said, oh yeah, you're surfing too much. Like, you need to put on more sunblock. Whatever. And I also noticed around the same time, February, March, I started to get a lot of bruises. Every time I went surfing, I would come back with like a new bruise on my stomach, or my chest, or on my arm, and they were unusually bigger bruises than usual. But being a, you know, typical guy, like I, and knowing that I just had a clean, you know, bill of health from my doctor, like I just thought like I was surfing a lot harder than I was, like, you know. I don't know, man, but I had a I ended up having a, went to Hawaii in May, because I used to go to Hawaii every year to go surf and visit my friends. And I went to Hawaii in May, and this trip to Hawaii was different than the previous years, because, you know, previous years I would go to Hawaii and I would want to, like, go out and, you know, I would surf every day like I did. And then at night I would, like, go out and, you know, go have dinner and go have drinks with my friends, or go out and party or go to a club or something and have fun. But I noticed this trip I had, first I went into the trip with a bad headache. I had like really bad case of headaches, like, and I was taking a lot of Tylenol and ibuprofen before I went to Hawaii. But I did have a issue with migraines when I was younger. Like, I had a couple episodes while I was still in school where I had to miss school a few days because I had severe migraines. And I thought it was just that, you know, happening again. And so I took a lot of ibuprofen and Tylenol, like, just to make the pain go away and just to get through the days, and then eventually I would be back to normal again, like how life always works. But yeah, the pain, the headaches were really bad in Hawaii, and then I would still surf every morning, but by like afternoon, evening time, I would be so tired and fatigued, so fatigued, and I would just be totally out of it. And I wouldn't even, like, you know, my friends would come over with like beers and stuff, and they'd be like, have a drink. And I'm like, nah, dude, I have a headache and I'm tired and I don't want to have a drink. Like, and, you know, they would make fun of me, like, oh, you're getting old. Like, like, what's wrong with you? Like, I don't want to hang out with you no more. Like, and I was there for like 10 days, and every single day was the same thing. I would surf in the morning. I would maybe go hiking and do something active in the daytime, and then by nighttime, like, just
totally wiped
deadly,
out.
deadly headache, and just totally wiped out. And while I was on my trip, I noticed, like, while I was brushing my teeth, I noticed, like, my gums were bleeding more. I noticed, like, I thought I was imagining at first, but I thought I was, like, coughing up blood or blowing my nose and blood was coming out. And I even thought I saw a tinge of like redness or blood in my urine, like when I was peeing. But I you know, I was on vacation, and I guess I was kind of in denial. I was like, you know, maybe it's just my eyes are tripping. It's not pink or red. I'm just, you know, don't freak yourself out, dude. Whatever. But I made it through Hawaii with a bunch more bruises and scratches and stuff, and I was getting scratches while I was surfing, and it wasn't it just kept on bleeding. It wouldn't stop. And I didn't know why that was happening. Even my friends' kids who were surfing with me, like, why is your knee still bleeding? Like, we surfed like hours ago. But nothing added together to, you know, equate to, I didn't even know what leukemia and cancer is.
That was the last thing on my mind.
But I, you know, after going through that ordeal, even going through all of that ordeal, I didn't have any kind of fear or panic, like
something's
crazy.
Wrong.
It was just like, just some shit is happening. Just wait till you go home and it'll all go away. I come home, and then my family sees me with like my bruises and my cuts and the dots. There's like thousands more dots now, red dots all over my body, and I'm super fatigued. And I'm
So you had the fatigue yet before you left for Hawaii too?
I did.
And this is all over 6 months.
This
basically.
Is all
from January. January, you had your clean bill of health.
And then like
and then
February, March.
The tiki I started, but then Hawaii was May.
So it was a couple months. It did progress quite quickly, and then when I came back from Hawaii, I went straight back to work, and
still super fatigued, and
I was still pretty fatigued, but I was functioning normally.
Okay.
I was going to work, I was getting home, and I was still surfing, and I was still running like in the morning or at night at that time, like, but I noticed like I was short, like short on breath a lot of times. And I really, really at that age, like all my friends were, at that time, my friends were complaining, oh, I'm getting old, my knees hurt, and I can't run.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck, dude. Like, maybe I'm just fucking getting old, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's all I remember thinking. Like,
yeah.
This is maybe,
this is
I have
this
to
age.
I mean, you're almost at 40.
Yeah.
Exactly. I was like,
it's
right
about
at,
that time.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right? Exactly. So that's what was really what I was thinking. But my family insisted that I make an appointment with my family doctor again.
Uh-huh.
And so when I came back from Hawaii, I made an appointment. And they made the appointment for June 24th, which was a couple days before I was diagnosed. So I went into work that morning, and I remember my manager had the flu like all week. And then that morning, the 24th, I woke up and went to work, and I felt like I had the flu. And I remember I told my manager, like, man, manager, I mean, she was a woman, you gave me your flu, whatever,
yeah,
I feel
yeah.
sick, I never call in sick, but I feel super sick, and I want to go home now, like,
yeah.
And I have an appointment later today at 3, and I'm just going to get myself checked out and see what's going on,
right.
And so I go home that morning, and then I'm rolling around, with the flu all, you know, all day, like, I was going to die, I felt like I was going to die, like,
yeah.
Terrible flu,
yeah.
And then I crawl in to the doctor's office by 3 o'clock, and then he sees me in a bad condition, and he's like, okay, well, I showed him all the petechiae eyes, all the red dots and all the bruises, and he didn't say nothing. He's like, okay, well, let me get some blood samples, some poop sample, and some blood sample,
yeah.
Like, sample everything.
Yeah.
And then he said, take these antibiotics, go home, rest, come back in 2 days, the 26th, 9 a.m. So on the 25th in the morning, he called me. He's like, how are you feeling today? He's like, I really need you to come in tomorrow, 9 a.m. sharp, whatever. Make sure you don't miss your appointment. And so I get in there the next day, the 26th, and I'm actually starting to feel better now. I feel like I took antibiotics, I rested for a couple days, and I'm
uh-huh.
like, I'm feeling back to normal, and maybe the doctor is just gonna tell me everything's good,
yeah.
Whatever. I went in to the doctor's office feeling good in the morning, and then he sat me down, and he handed me a sheet of paper, just like this, and he's like, Alex, you gotta look at these are your blood results, like your white blood cell count is at 217,000.
Oh.
Wow.
And I don't even know what that meant. I'm like, what does that mean?
217,000.
Yeah.
Like, and he said, well, let me, he's like, yeah, well, a normal person, you normally carries around 6 to 10,000 white blood cell count, and you're like
way
high. And I'm like, what does that mean? He said, you have acute myeloid leukemia. He said, you have cancer, you have leukemia, and the reason why it's so high is because acute means that it's multiplying fast. You have these immature white blood cells.
Mm-hmm.
Basically taking over your body.
And it's taking over your body, and it's multiplying fast, acutely, and it's pushing out all your red blood cells,
mm-hmm.
and pushing out all your platelets.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, that's why you're out of breath, and you're super tired, and you're getting headaches.
Yeah.
And then you have no platelets, and that's why you're bleeding. He's like, I can see you're like bleeding everywhere. Like, your blood is coming out of your blood vessels. That's why you have like red dots on your eyes and on your face and everything. Like, you know, he's like, there's traces of blood in your samples and everything. He's like, you need you to go see a hematologist, which is a blood doctor, cancer doctor, right away in Los Alamitos. And that, you know, after he told me that, there was that initial shock. Like, I don't think anybody's ever prepared to hear the word cancer and leukemia.
Was anyone with you?
No, I was by myself.
Oh, by yourself.
Yeah. Because, like I said, leading up to it, I didn't think anything of it. I even researched online, you know, several days before what are these red dots, or what red dots on the body, heavy bruises.
Did petechiae come up?
Fatigue. Yeah,
it
did. It did. And
I
scrolled through, and you know, if you go online and you look up red dots on the skin, there's like a million, right?
Sure, yeah.
So cancer came up across the screen several times, and each time it came up, you just scroll right through
right,
it. Because it's definitely not cancer.
Yeah.
It's definitely not this.
It's definitely
not cancer.
Right. Like.
But sure enough, dude, the doctor said it's cancer. I'm like, shit, I saw that online. I said that shit might be cancer.
They saw the five times.
Scrolled right past that one.
Yeah. It's freaky, but you know, after the doctor told me, my initial reaction was fear and sadness, and I cried. And the reason why I cried was because all I could think about was my mom. You know, being an only child all my life, and you know, a single parent with just my mom, like my mom is kind of like everything to me. And like I was thinking, fuck dude, my mom's gonna be devastated. Like how do I even like tell her, like her son just got diagnosed with cancer, and then the thought of me dying and leaving my mom here in this world by herself, and the thought of her just crying and being sad and losing her son, like just the terrible, terrible vision. I cried for a little bit, and I cried all the way walking to the car. You know, my doctor said, you need to go see this hematologist right now. So he's like, you know, you can't even go home, just go straight there.
Man.
Like you're, like my doctor said, like I can't believe you're still alive right now. Like your numbers indicate that you could be dead right now.
Right.
But whatever, I called my mom. I finally told her, and then she came straight to Los Alamitos to meet with me, and then met with the hematologist, and they did more blood tests, and he confirmed that it was acute myeloid leukemia, and it was at 217,000 white blood cell count, and that they had to start induction chemo right away, like
that night or the next
morning.
Wow.
So because, they admitted me to the hospital right away that same day, put me in a room. They couldn't get the chemo until the next day, so they did the bone marrow biopsy aspiration for the first time. And that was scary as shit. One of the most scariest things I've ever done. I've never even been to the, prior to this, I rarely ever went to the hospital. I've never had broken a bone. I've never had surgery. I've never had anything cut open in my body.
Wow.
I was highly, highly scared of needles. I was needle phobic. Even when they were trying to draw my blood a couple of days before, I was like screaming like a girl in the hospital. it was a rude awakening to this.
Yeah, you didn't have any time to process anything.
That same day that I got diagnosed, they inserted a PICC line, did the bone marrow biopsy, placed me in a room, put my little bag robot toy thing roller that we all know next to me, and hooked me up to that, and I was in the hospital for the next 40 days, and the very next day they started the 7-day, 7-night induction chemo, which is cytarabine and some other crazy whatever. That was my first taste of chemo. Like I didn't even know how chemo was administered. I didn't even know what chemo was. Like I found out real quick that it's just these bags of poison that they intravenously drip into your body, and then your body reacts from it. Like,
so that was the first treatment.
That was first treatment.
30 days of 30 to 40 days of chemo.
No, it was 7 days.
Oh, 7 days. But
and
you had to stay in the hospital.
I had to stay in the hospital after that, because they had to, you know, monitor me
and evaluate me
and see if the induction chemo put me in remission.
Right.
And they had to do like a prognosis and determine what other crazy cells I had. And they did, you know, like a week or two after my chemo, they said, you know, we did more research on your blood and stuff, and we found out you have a leukemia cell called the FLT3 cell, which is a cell traditionally that is unable to be killed by chemo alone. It's effective with chemo initially, but it 100% it always comes back within 6 months. That's when they told me you have to have a bone marrow transplant.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so that was discussed right away, pretty much.
It was discussed.
Once they figured out this, you had this cell.
This cell, yep.
As soon as they identified that, you have to have a transplant. Wow.
And they even gave me a deadline. They said you have to have a transplant within 6 months.
Oh.
Because they said historically, anybody who has the FLT3 cell, the cell always comes back in 6 months. And then if it comes back and you don't have a transplant before it comes back,
you die.
The second time, it won't, the chemo won't work. And then you die.
Like no radiation into it either?
No. No.
Jeez.
So, yeah.
What a mind fuck.
But it wasn't that bad, though, because, I don't know, for some reason I was on, like, my mom was really positive about it, surprisingly. She was very strong, and then I wanted to stay positive about it. So every time, you know, I was already in this cancer mess, like, the fuck, I don't think it gets
worse. Just
pile
it on.
Yeah.
Just give me the worst of it.
Yeah.
And then they told me, yeah, you need to find a match, get a transplant. I don't even know what a match is.
Right.
A bone marrow transplant. And they're like, oh, yeah, you usually find a match with somebody from your own ethnic background or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm full Chinese.
There's a billion of us.
Yes.
Yeah,
3.2 billion of us on this earth, dude. There's no way.
Out there.
There's no way I'm not going to find a match. So I wasn't even sweating it. I was like, I got this, dude. Whatever.
I got this. No problem.
Yeah, and then they're like, okay, well, now I'm going to give you a choice. You could go to UCLA or you could go to City of Hope. These are the only two main hospitals that do bone marrow transplants. And I was like, you know, I had an experience with UCLA with my uncle being sick, and I didn't like the experience of being treated there for my uncle. And so I was like, fuck, all I want is hope and positive energy. So City of Hope, just the name itself.
Right.
That's their mission, too.
Yeah,
I didn't
know. Open to reality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I didn't know City of Hope. Yeah. It's weird. I had City of Hope pens and notepads at my house, but I never
really?
Knew what
before?
City... Before? Yeah.
No way.
I just never knew what City of Hope... Because, like I said, cancer was the last thing...
Yeah.
Like,
no one in your family.
Right. No, nobody. I used to watch TV, and you know those infomercials that would come up like, oh, come to this cancer treatment center in Arizona or something, and blah, blah, blah. I would always just change the channel real quick, or I would watch it for a few minutes and be like, oh, that looks like a nice place, but click.
That doesn't apply.
Right? Yeah. But, yeah, like, I never, ever imagined that I would end up at one of those places.
Right.
And I ended up at City of Hope, which is probably better than those stupid infomercials that I saw. But yeah, I going from Los Alamitos Hospital, which was really scary, and going to City of Hope. City of Hope is like a 5-star resort compared to these other hospitals.
That's
I felt like I was at like a.
You
like
just
kind of
know you're in the right.
Yeah.
In the right hands.
The right,
right
place and the right vibe and the people and the nurses and the
right.
doctors and everything. And so. Yeah, I get to City of Hope because I needed to continue my chemo treatment. I guess it was like once every month to keep me in remission until I found a match.
Right.
Which I was still fully hopeful that I would find a match real soon.
Yeah.
I got to City of Hope, and then, you know, I would sit down in like the waiting room of the lobby, and I would see, that was the first time in my life I met a bunch of other leukemia patients and who are going through treatments or going through chemo and some who had their transplants, and they're mostly Caucasian people.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask them about, oh, how did you find a match and blah, 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 and they go, oh, yeah, we went into the registry and I had like 20 matches that
right.
were like all 100%
yeah.
and I was able to choose who I wanted, like the age and the background and what part of the country he was from. I'm like, wow, that's crazy, dude. Like, and then, you know, when my doctors, you know, I was staying at City of Hope, my doctors come back to me and like, we still haven't found a match and we're having a hard time finding a match and blah, blah, blah. And that's when it really hit home to me. Like, you know, Be The Match came and they started explaining what it is to do a bone marrow transplant and find a match. And they started in A3M and
yeah.
They started to give me the statistics, like, you know,
right.
out of the 11 or however many millions at that
okay.
time
yeah.
in the registry, like only 7% are of Asian descent. And,
mm-hmm.
and all minority groups are like severely, severely underrepresented in the bone
exactly.
marrow registry,
yeah. yes.
except for Caucasians.
Yes.
And I'm, you know, I'm definitely not Caucasian. So I was like, this is kind of fucked up because I'm here in the hospital and I have a deadline and you're telling me all the registries in the world, there's not a single match.
Mm-hmm.
So what am I going to do now? Like,
yeah.
do I just cross my fingers and hope that a new match pops up through the efforts of other people, the organizations that are doing this? Or what do I do? Like, what do I do? Like, I don't want to just lay here and
yeah.
just continue to get chemo and just keep and cross my fingers. And,
right.
and then that's when I was like, all right, fuck it, dude. Like, I got to do something. Like, I gotta do something. Like, and that's when I posted like my first post on Instagram about my cancer, because I didn't make it public at first.
Mm-hmm.
There was no need to. It's just, you know,
mm-hmm.
I just got sick.
Right.
But now there's a need.
Right.
Like, I needed to
get
plea.
Awareness.
I needed
yeah.
to make a plea to the world. Like,
yeah.
hey, I'm dying. I need to, you know. And then KTLA and NBC and all these news channels reached out to me, and these churches and organizations and big, you know, church organizations, Buddhist organizations, whatever, they reached out to me and they heard about my story, and everybody wanted to help.
Yeah.
And so that's how I kind of began my journey as a...
advocate.
As an advocate, as a face,
yeah.
To join the bone marrow registry, to you know, help people, other people who have leukemia or cancer, just to be a part of this world now. And that's how I got myself. That's kind of like my road or my journey of how I got myself involved in this, rather than to just be a patient,
waiting.
Right.
Yeah.
Like an anonymous patient, like
yeah.
nobody would ever hear about. I mean,
right.
I know there's a lot of cancer survivors out there that nobody knows their story, like,
yeah.
except their family. They don't share it or whatever. And there really is no right or wrong. Like, but for me, initially it was to help myself find a match. And then once I realized of the statistics and how severely underrepresented we were, and there's a lot that came with it. It was like the, you know, the culture and the traditions of Asian people, and donating your blood and donating your stem cells and letting Western medicine go in to take stuff out of your body. It was like taboo for,
yeah.
And I was like,
yeah.
well, you know, it's 2014. I'm a you know, American-born Chinese, and you know, I'm in this position. I have cancer. I'm sick, and I now have this position to be the voice and the face to make a difference. And it's not just about me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about saving my own life and finding myself a match. It's about being the face and putting forth an effort so that all people that are underrepresented in the bone marrow registry that get sick
have a chance. Yeah.
It should be equal.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought about it. If everybody in this world were born and we're mandated to, you know, donate your marrow, just like, you know, you turn 18 and you're given the choice to donate blood or donate your organs. If everybody in the world did this, and nobody
there'd
would ever...
There'd be no one dying.
Right. But
not
then,
finding a donor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then there is nothing out there at that time in 2014
right. yeah.
to I mean, there were some things, but there just wasn't enough done.
No,
right.
yeah.
I guess Leukemia is not a big enough issue for everybody.
Well, I think it's just that there's not enough awareness for the need for donors. People
right.
know what leukemia is.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't know how they can help.
Right.
You just
and
figure
so,
you
so
just need chemotherapy and
right,
you're cured.
Right. It's
you just
not
that.
Right.
It's
so did you? So did you find a match through Be the Match?
So
were you able to find a match?
So Be the Match. You know, through the 5 months that I was searching, 5 or 6 months, they did come across a few leads. They found a couple of leads in China. They found one in Japan. And I forget, there were several leads. And they would come into my hospital room and say, hey, we found a lead and blah, blah, blah. We're working on it. We're trying to find more information. And then a few days later, they would always come back and be like, oh, it's a dead lead. We can't get in contact with this person, or this person refused, or they can't really disclose why, but
right.
they just say they
for various
can't.
Reasons they can't do it.
So yeah, a lot of ups and downs, and I thought I was going to be Japanese, and I thought it was going to be this, and I thought it was going to be that, and all really cool ideas and visions
yeah.
and thoughts, but it didn't pan out, and I did get kind of scared, because I was coming down to like the 5th month. Then, and
imagine.
You know, I was like, fuck, I can't find a match. Like, you know, you guys.
This is it.
Yeah.
Guy.
And then my doctor, Dr. Elizabeth Buddy, she's like, you know, I've been watching your case, and I think you're a good candidate for a cord blood transplant. And I'm like, it's a clinical trial. It was a clinical trial at that time. And I was like, a cord blood transplant? Well, like, what is that? And blah, blah, blah. And she explained it to me. And after they explained it to me, it actually sounded better to have a cord blood transplant than a adult donor transplant. Because they explain if you use a cord blood transplant, the initial engrafting may take a little longer. Like after you have your transplant, it may take your body a little bit longer to accept the cord blood stem cells. But after it accepts it, you're gonna have significantly less graft versus host disease for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I had to wait. Like if I get an adult donor, I might engraft faster, but I'm gonna deal with all these complications
issues.
All my life,
mm-hmm.
skin issues, organ issues, whatever, graft versus host,
mm-hmm.
GVHD. Or I could just get through this really brutal first month or first year or whatever of the cord blood transplant and then live happily ever after. And luckily for me, that's exactly how it panned out. They tested me to see if I qualified, if I was eligible to do the clinical trial of a cord blood transplant, and City of Hope did all of that. And they said my heart was that as strong as a 20-year-old. They said my lungs were as strong as a Olympic swimmer. And they're like, dude, everything about you is like you're in peak health. Like you're a perfect candidate for a cord blood transplant. And so I had the transplant January 23rd of 2015, which was 7 months after my diagnosis. And luckily the cancer never came back, the FLT3 never came back within the 7 months, and then I was able to have my transplant, and it was a success. I mean, it was brutal to go through what I went through, but it panned out to be like this miracle story, and I had a successful transplant, and I am, you know, cancer-free now and super healthy and no graft versus host disease. And
what year did you just celebrate post-transplant? How many years post?
So I had my transplant January 23rd of 2015, so I just had my 4-year
birthday.
Yep. For a 4-year post-transplant birthday, and I am now officially half man, half baby, and I'm also officially half Chinese, half Hispanic. Because
maybe that's why you still look like
look like you're 25.
Yeah.
It's the stem cell therapy. You know, people pay thousands.
It's
the
new beauty regimen.
Yes, people pay thousands of dollars for stem cell therapies, and people ask me all the time, like, how do you look so young? And I told them I had a cord blood transplant with the baby. And, not
is it, oh, can I have that? No, you cannot.
But yeah, so yeah, my mom is good. She's in a good place now, and I'm in a good place now, and I'm just so filled with gratitude and gratefulness and for everything, for City of Hope, for my family, for you guys, for my doctors, for everything, for the universe, for God, for love, for and you know, my story, that's just the story of, you know, when I got diagnosed and where I am today, but there's more story to leading up to my diagnosis, and then I believe there's going to be a lot more stories as a result of this incident from my life in the future. But I am really just amazed at how far I've come, and you know, and that I've made it this far, and that I'm here sitting in this room with you, with you wonderful people, and you, my fellow survivors.
And so based on that and your story and how incredible it's been and what a journey, what has brought you to this point? You know, why now? Why this outreach? Why this podcast?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, the outreach kind of happened organically. It wasn't part of my initial plan. I didn't want to be a face or an advocate for cancer initially. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I because of my search for my own donor,
mm-hmm.
I had this epiphany or realization that it's more than just me. Like,
mm-hmm.
I needed to do this for the well-being of all people on this planet, and
mm-hmm.
for the future of people, the future of, you know, cancer patients and leukemia patients and people who need a match. And you know, I can say this, like, after even, you know, the treatment, 5-6 months of treatment leading up to my transplant, and then the treatments and the ordeals that I had to go through during and after my transplant, it was very, very difficult. Like, super, super hard on my body, and you know, I felt like I was at the brink of, you know, I was knocking on heaven's doors, basically. You know, I felt like I was right there, and I just knew that if I told myself during that time, like, if I could just survive this, if I can get through this, I want to give back. I definitely want to give back.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to share my experience to maybe give other people hope in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want what I went through to go in vain. I've always felt like I got sick for a reason. And I never thought for one second that the reason was for me to just get sick and die and put everybody in a foul mood. I felt like, okay, this is a challenge. This is something that God or the universe gave me, to, like, an opportunity almost to show the world that cancer is not a life, not a death sentence, that you can beat cancer, and that you can beat it, and you can be stronger, and then you can lift, you can make it almost. And I kind of cringe when I say this, but somehow cancer is kind of like a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for me, cancer is a blessing, because it's given me so much more perspective on life, and it's given me so much growth and inner strength and mental strength, and it's also allowed me to inspire and uplift and provide a good energy to all those around me.
Yes.
You know, and it's a, it's something that I've, it's a, it's an energy that I've never been able to share with other people had I not gotten cancer. One of my favorite movies, one of my favorite movies that I used to watch all the time was Soul Surfer, you know, Bethany Hamilton, the the girl who had her arm
bitten off.
And then, you know, in her movie, I think at the end, she said something like, quote, like she's been, she said something, and don't quote me on this, but she said, like, after she got her arm bitten off, and with only one arm, she's been able to embrace more people in the world by sharing her story than she was able to do with two arms before she got sick. And I feel kind of like that.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm able to embrace more people and have more of an impact in this world because of me getting sick than what I would have been able to give had I not.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that's kind of just how I feel. And that's kind of the gist of my story. And, you know, now we're doing this podcast with you guys, and why I want to do it. You know, first and foremost, just meeting you and Brandon several times, because we're all part of this cancer world now, part of this cancer community.
This club that we don't want, we didn't raise our hand for.
Right. Yeah, no. But I am part of this community, and I see you inspiring people, and for me, it just feels good to work with you guys and to be able to, you know, I don't know, I don't have a clear plan of how I want to help the world by sharing my story, but I do know I definitely want to try to spread some goodness and spread some hope and spread some positivity through this really, really terrible thing that we experienced. And I would love to be able to do that with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm just kind of tagging along with you guys, because I feel like you guys are very inspirational and awesome people. And I just want to be a part of what you guys do, whatever it is, you know?
That's
our
new man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
inspire us just as much.
Thing, yeah.
I mean,
I feel like you're my guru.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You just gave me chicken skin. That's the feeling I want. It's, you know, chicken skin is goosebumps, and hearing you guys' stories and reading you guys' stories always gave me goosebumps, and how you guys. And other survivors and, and other good stories, how they give you goosebumps and these these chicken skin feeling. And that's what I want to do. I want to give people these good chicken skin feelings and this feeling of hope and and positivity and and all that good stuff. Like,
chicken skin vibes, baby.
Yeah. So
cool.
Yeah. But yeah. 19 years, Brandon, and 1 year, Chrissy.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing, dude, to be sitting here with you guys.